The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
Thank you. Well, it's a different year as we mark these things on our calendar. So I thought I would begin this year with a talk about one of the most fundamental aspects of our Buddhist practice. And it could also feed into a wish or an aspiration that we might have for this year. So the topic is spiritual friendship. And perhaps we could aspire to strengthen our spiritual friendships or to more fully embody the qualities of a good, wise friend as this year goes along. And maybe we'll discover also ways to be a better friend to ourselves. The Buddha had a lot to say about wise friendship, all of it good. It's often cited as the foundation of successful practice or a critical factor in spiritual growth. The Pali word is kalyanamitta, and it's sometimes translated as wise friendship, admirable friendship, spiritual friendship, noble friendship, or simply good friendship. A good friend is a real treasure on the path. So in this talk, I'd like to explore some of the qualities of good friends and good friendship as they are described in the suttas, and then talk a little bit about how we can find that kind of friendship here in our modern lives. Spiritual friends not only enhance our prospects for happiness right now in the immediate sense, but they also lead us closer to the goal of the Buddhist path to liberation. So why is this so important? Why do we need good friends? Basically, it's because our minds are malleable. And that's a good thing. That's what allows our spiritual development. But we take on the qualities of those that we associate with. If we associate well, then we'll shape our minds to have more wholesome qualities and to practice the Dhamma well. Similarly, if we associate with unwise people, say people who are focused very much on sense pleasure, sometimes the Buddha simply calls these folks fools, then we'll slide down into their ways and do harm to ourselves and to others. So the Buddha says this quite clearly. He says, "I see no other thing that is so much responsible for the arising of unwholesome qualities in a person as bad friendship, and nothing so helpful for the arising of wholesome qualities as good friendship." He also says it a bit more colorfully in a different place. "A person who wraps rotting fish in a blade of kusa grass makes the grass smelly. So it is if you seek out fools. But a person who wraps powdered incense in the leaf of a tree makes the leaf fragrant. So it is if you seek out the enlightened." So the first thing to notice here is that friendship is not left up to chance. We are instructed to seek out wise friends and to deliberately associate with them. So there's effort involved in friendship. Sometimes this is the first real effort we have to make on the path, actually. Long before a person is making strong effort in deep meditation, there's a need to get the external conditions in place. So we may need to do some of this outer work in our lives in order to enable deeper practice. Now, you're already doing it. Some of us had to make effort to get here this morning, I think. And, you know, you've always made some kind of effort to begin this practice, to do your meditation, so it's already starting to happen. So who is an admirable friend or a kalyanamitta, and what sort of relationship should we have with them? Well, again, the Buddha gives a lot of clear guidance about this. So let's look at some of the suttas that talk about friendship. First of all, there's one where the Buddha talks about four qualities to look for and emulate in a good friend. And these qualities are faith, or sadha, virtue, or sila, generosity, or chaga, and wisdom, or panya. And specifically, this sutta says, what is good friendship? Herein, in whatsoever village or market town a householder dwells, he associates, converses, and engages in discussions with householders or householders' sons, whether young and highly cultured or old and highly cultured, full of faith, full of virtue, full of generosity, and full of wisdom. He acts in accordance with the faith of the faithful, with the virtue of the virtuous, with the generosity of the generous, and with the wisdom of the wise. This is called good friendship. So we all have people in our lives who exemplify certain good qualities. You know, we know these people, our wise grandmother or the neighbor that we know we can always trust. And the Buddha encourages us to use our discernment to look around at the people that we know and notice who has these wholesome qualities and then associate frequently with them and consciously emulate these good qualities. Once I had a friend who was very kind to animals. That was kind of her gift in life. And her worldly work was actually around protecting animals, and she knew a lot about them and about their habitats. And it was so interesting. I noticed that whenever I was with her, I would see more animals. And I also noticed that I could feel a real appreciation and connection for them that I'm sure I wouldn't have had on my own, you know, because I was with her. This is this quality of being able to take on the good qualities of others. And so I felt this sort of sense of interconnection, and through her I could tap into that. And I discerned that was a good quality to be more aware of in myself. And so because of being with her in that way and having that discernment, I began to see within myself more of an untapped potential for interconnection. So this is actually the real influence of a good friend, is that through them we see our own good more clearly. This is an important point because it means that there's some skill in interacting with these wise friends. We're told that we should consciously emulate their qualities, and it's important not to fall into a comparing mindset, you know, where we say, oh, they have all these good things, then I don't have them, I'm inadequate in some way compared to this other person, I'd better hang around them and learn how to be a real person. You know, it's not that comparative mindset. It's more that by being with them, we discover what's already in ourselves that we just weren't able to see before. You know, it's possible maybe to see it externally before we can see it internally. I think we can sense the good in people in some kind of intuitive way. You know, why are we drawn to the presence of certain teachers? Why do people find monastics really wholesome to hang out with? Well, it's because they have strong qualities of good, and our heart somehow resonates with that. In the Dhammapada, it actually says that virtue carries a scent that is more beautiful than the scent of flowers and can travel upwind and in all directions. So trust your heart in this regard. Hang out with the people who make you feel lighter and clearer, happier, and somehow stronger. There's another sutta that describes seven qualities of a good friend. A friend endowed with seven qualities is worth associating with. Which seven? He gives what is hard to give. She does what is hard to do. He endures what is hard to endure. She reveals her secrets to you. He keeps your secrets. When misfortune strikes, she doesn't abandon you. When you're down and out, he doesn't look down on you. A friend endowed with these seven qualities is worth associating with. So this begins to point towards some concrete actions that are done by wise friends. And in particular, notice that spiritual friends give in a way that's not just casual. And they, you know, it says that they give what's hard to give, and they do what's hard to do. So maybe this person picks you up from the airport not just at 3 p.m., but at 3 a.m. Or they bring over food every day for 2 weeks after you have surgery, sometimes staying to clean your house and checking your mail. Or when you become completely confused and you get angry at this person for something that they didn't do, they don't just get angry back and end the friendship. They realize that what you have is something deeper than that, and they love you enough to see through the rough patch and to understand that a temporary mind state that overwhelmed you is not threatening to your friendship. So they forgive. One time I went up to Seattle, and because of the circumstances of when I arrived, I didn't have an arrangement for a ride. And so I called a friend there that I knew, but I knew that it was an inconvenient time of day for her. But she was who I knew, so I called her and I asked if she could pick me up. Well, not only did she pick me up, but she brought lunch. And then she took me on a little tour of an area that I hadn't seen before, but that she knew well because she lived there and she knew I was interested in seeing. So I had been a little bit apologetic when I called her. Oh, I'm sorry, I'm taking your time, I hope you don't mind. And she never responded to that verbally, but her actions indicated that, you know, for her, helping me, picking me up, and spending time with me was the best use of her time. And I felt really cared for, and that was a, you know, that was just such a nice feeling. So here's another sutta that talks about the mutual responsibilities of friends. It says, in five ways should friends and colleagues be respected: by generosity, kind words, acting for their welfare, impartiality, and honesty. And friends and colleagues so respected reciprocate with compassion in five ways: by protecting you when you are vulnerable, and likewise your wealth; by being a refuge when you are afraid; by not abandoning you in misfortunes; and by honoring all your descendants. So this is starting to get a little bit more complex, right? Friendship is seen as a relationship where each party behaves in a way that produces harmony and safety and peace. And note that it's not about, and it doesn't say anything about getting something out of the relationship in a personal way. If anything, if there's anything like that in there, it's about mutual benefit. But even more importantly, it's about establishing healthy mind states and about doing meritorious actions. So good friendship could be seen as the field in which good karma flourishes, wholesome karma. This is why the Sangha is said to be an incomparable field of merit for the world. Basically, friends mutually create the conditions for good to arise. So it could be said that friendship is more of a verb than a noun. Good friendship also, lest this start to sound a little bit idealized, good friendship also includes the possibility of constructive criticism for the purpose of spiritual development. Bhikkhu Bodhi says in an essay that's called Association with the Wise, the task of the noble friend is not only to provide companionship in the treading of the way. The truly wise and compassionate friend is one who, with understanding and sympathy of heart, is ready to criticize and admonish, to point out someone's faults, to exhort and encourage, perceiving that the final end of such friendship is growth in the Dhamma. This is also stated by the Buddha in the Dhammapada. So this is from Gill's translation. Like someone pointing to treasure is the wise person who sees your faults and points them out. Associate with such a sage. Good will come of it, not bad, if you associate with one such as this. So the kind of Pollyanna or very nice behavior that you see sometimes, that can feel good on the surface, but in the end, I think we know probably in the long run that it's not very safe to have a friendship that's only based on that. So this kind of admonishment, now it has to be done wisely, but it's very important. There's a great example of this in the suttas, and I regret to say that I actually couldn't find it when I was looking for it, but I remember it well enough that I'll kind of paraphrase. One of the Buddha's disciples, one of the famous ones whose name you might even have heard, I just can't remember what it is, was talking to a friend of his, and he says, basically, you know, it seems like I have all these great attainments, and yet my mind is still not liberated. I just can't understand how this could happen. And so the person he's talking to, who is another one of the Buddha's very wise disciples, says to him, well, that's your problem right there. You know, the fact that you want this enlightenment is your desire. The fact that you are talking about your attainments is your conceit. And the fact that you're worried that it hasn't happened yet is your anxiety. It would be good for you if you would let go of your desire, your conceit, and your anxiety. And as these stories go, the first monk thought that was a good idea, went back and let go of these things and was free. But the point is well taken, right, is that this person, you know, they'd been practicing together for a long time, and one of them knew the other one well enough to just say, look, there's where you're clinging. And that can be a real gift to someone when it's done wisely. I know I've had encounters with teachers where essentially that was what happened, and maybe initially I was a little taken aback, but in the long run I could see what they were pointing to, and that was a greater gift than, you know, than I don't know what, just letting me persist in ignorance. So here's a sutta quote that many people have heard. It's often quoted, but maybe you haven't heard all of it. So it starts like this. Venerable Ananda said to the Blessed One, this is half of the holy life, Lord. Admirable friendship, admirable companionship, admirable camaraderie. Don't say that, Ananda, don't say that. Admirable friendship, admirable companionship, admirable camaraderie is actually the whole of the holy life. So we tend to stop there. But the sutta actually goes on, and it says, this is the Buddha speaking, it is in dependence on me as an admirable friend that beings subject to birth have gained release from birth, that beings subject to aging have gained release from aging, that beings subject to death have gained release from death, that beings subject to sorrow, lamentation, pain, distress, and despair have gained release from these. It is through this line of reasoning that one may know how admirable friendship, admirable companionship, admirable camaraderie is actually the whole of the holy life. So that's a little different, right? Ultimately, we are asked to look toward the Buddha as the best of admirable friends. So having the best friend is what brings the best result of liberation. So in the Buddha's time, of course, one could associate directly with the Buddha. And we know very well, by the way, that the Buddha regularly admonished people as well as encouraging them. So, you know, he wasn't this the nicey-nicey kind of friend always. In our time, we don't have a living Buddha, at least not in our tradition. So that means that we can discover for ourselves what it means to befriend the Buddha. Maybe we'll find the Buddha in the texts, or in some kind of devotional practice, or in a very wise teacher, or in some intuitive dimension of our own heart. But in the end, ultimately, this is where we are to look for our highest aspirations. Clearly, friendship is no small thing in Buddhism. It's essential to walking the path, from the very first associations that we have with our buddies and our families, the wholesome qualities there, to a relationship with the spiritual teacher, you know, all the way up to the highest relationship somehow with the Buddha. So that's a bit of a whirlwind tour of friendship as it's described in the suttas. And so it's possible now to extract some ideas that are relevant for our modern lives. You know, how can we strengthen wise friendship right here? So first of all, we'll start with maybe the bluntest, which is choose wisely. Most of us have many people in our lives, so we have a lot of choices in that sense. So to put it very bluntly, we should choose carefully where to devote our time. You're not actually obligated to spend time with anyone in your life. It may feel like that, but you're not. So choose carefully. Sometimes this happens naturally. As a person begins meditation practice, often he or she tends to become less interested in certain activities that agitate the mind. So sometimes our more casual acquaintances will become even weaker, just because we don't do those things anymore. Other times we may realize that we need to make a more deliberate break with someone in our lives. And I'll say that carefully. It should always be done slowly as part of an organic process. It's not something you need to rush out and change unless there's something abusive happening. But do keep in mind as you do your practice that who we associate with has a major influence on our minds. And if we have so many choices of people, why not choose the best? So the second thing we can do is we can attend a sangha. Luckily, we've all done that. Sitting with others and hearing the Dharma together is a natural way to strengthen our own inclination to practice. And attending sangha is also a way to meet people whose interests may be aligned with our own. So the kind of things that we do here and maybe the social gatherings that we have afterwards, those are really good ways to develop community and meet people. We also, here at IMC, we have something called Dharma Practice Days that go on one day a month, and they're very much intended to develop this aspect of spiritual friendship because we talk about our practice and we discuss the Dhamma with other people who have the same interest as us. Another option is to have spiritual conversations with people that you trust, or to even join a Kalyanamitta group, you know, form a group of spiritual friends that are going to get together regularly. I know many people here have done that. And there's a lot of things you can do with friends like this. You know, when you're in a deliberate relationship with other folks who have the same practice, and then you can do little exercises together. For example, you can make practice opportunities. I know that one of the most interesting things is to, to have a conversation where you agree that you're not going to talk about anybody who isn't present. So this is sort of a form of wise speech. And you'll discover, first of all, that it's difficult. We love to talk about other people. And it's not wrong or bad. This is an exercise that we're doing. And also, it somehow increases the intimacy. You know, if you can only talk about people who are present, then you have to be with what's present, and you have to be in tune and in touch with what's happening for you, because that's what you can talk about. It's very interesting. In general, sharing your practice with other spiritual friends can be beneficial. You know, if you talk about a challenge that you're having with someone that you trust, or if you talk about something that you're trying to develop in yourself or something that you're interested in, you may deepen your own understanding just through sharing that. And then through hearing what they say, begin to make the spiritual life more part of your own natural part of your being and not something that's separate, divided, has to be done very consciously and with effort, but it just becomes more natural. Other things you can do with spiritual friends include volunteering together. Maybe you'll decide to go and work together on some kind of volunteer work and then share your experience. Talk about what it was like. Talk about how you'd been generous together. All these things strengthen the wholesome qualities that are associated with having good spiritual friendship. And then I think it's worth mentioning also that we can consider how to be a good friend to ourselves. So it's important to have associates on the path, but in the end, we have our own mind and our own heart. And there are many ways that we can give those same qualities of friendship that are talked about, generosity and virtue and wisdom and compassion, we can give those to ourselves also. So we can look into our own situation and we can ask, you know, where could a little more care and understanding be in my life? Where could my practice be a little bit stronger? And, you know, how can I give that to myself? It's a season of gift giving. What gifts have you given to yourself lately? So I hope very much that we'll all benefit from strong and deep spiritual friendships in this coming year. And I would like to open it up, because friendship is not something that we just think about by ourselves, but we share it in community. I'd like to invite people to offer examples of friendship that they've experienced, examples of the benefits of spiritual friendship, or maybe you'll want to share an aspiration that you have around friendship for this year. Stating it publicly can sometimes deepen it somehow. So please, I'd like to offer that opportunity to speak.
There's a line I like about friendship, just briefly. It is, if you want to have a friend, then be a friend.
Very wise.
You mentioned, one of the things you mentioned is the selection, the choice that's available for friends. Sometimes that, of course, is true. On the other hand, there are times when you're called upon to offer assistance which is not of your choosing, and you are asked to or one is asked to provide assistance of various kinds or to continue in a relationship which perhaps if you had to choose it and it was completely up to you, you may not be there. You may choose not to do that, but you see the need, and you see the request, and you have an insight that you would be doing a service to someone else rather perhaps than to you'd be doing a greater service by providing that. Providing your presence rather than getting something from it. In other words, you're giving rather than receiving. So it's not always a choice that you would make, but a choice that you feel is spiritually required at the moment. Could you comment on that?
Yes. Certainly, there's a lot of wisdom in what you said, and compassion also in that. We can find ourselves in situations where what we're experiencing may not sound like it fits these ideals that I talked about in the suttas, and yet there is always a freedom there in how we respond. to the situation that we're in and how we give and what we give. And this may sound... What came to mind while you were speaking, actually, was a story about a spiritual teacher who was going on a trek up through the mountains. He was going to have to go up into, I don't know, Tibet or something. And he needed to bring an attendant with him. And he looked around at who he could bring. And the most available person was this really obnoxious guy who complained all the time and criticized the teacher and had no particular faith in him and was really sloppy and messy, but was kind of available. And so the teacher deliberately took this fellow with him as his guide. Why? Because it would strengthen him to be in the presence of this person during an isolated long trek through the Himalayas. And I'm not saying that we should deliberately look for situations like that, but maybe the point is clear there somehow, in that, you know, these associations that we have are what they are, in a way. And we can always bring something to them. You know, we can always offer something and find a way that they are for spiritual growth and hence for mutual benefit. Is that speaking to what you're... Yeah, okay.
Yeah. Okay, now you can hear me. Good morning. I guess my question is... I have a question and a comment. But the question is, giving feedback when it's not asked for, when you really see or feel something's wrong in a friendship, and they're not asking for any information, and you want to say something, but you just don't know. I just have trouble with that. Like, am I imposing a value that I just think is better? And who am I to think I'm better than, you know? I go through the whole mindset thing, and often I won't say anything then. So what do you think?
Well, is this a situation where you feel like you're coming from a different set of values than the other person, or is there some actual issue that you're disagreeing on? I guess I'm not entirely clear on the situation, and I don't need to know the details.
Right, but. It could be either. I'm not thinking of a specific example. I'm just kind of thinking of all the times I haven't said anything.
Okay, you know? So then maybe what you could look at is, in yourself, what's the concern about saying something? I don't know you very well, but I suspect that you would have some ability to say this in a polite and calm way, and yet you're hesitating. There's some hesitation in you. So maybe this is based on some kind of concern of, you know, I don't know what the fear or the concern is about being able to say, I don't quite agree with this, or I would be more comfortable if such and such. Mm-hmm. And, you know, maybe no action needs to be taken right away. It's just an interesting reflection. What's going on at that? And you'll have to be in that moment. You know, you can't really think about it abstractly. Mm-hmm. So maybe wait for that moment to arise another 5 or 10 times and just observe. Still don't say anything, but just observe what's going on. You know, what is it that is stopping that, or what is the feeling that's happening there? Mm-hmm. And when you know that, then you'll know if it's necessary to say something or not.
Thank you, and you answered my comment too.
Okay.
So I really appreciated your question and have spent a fair amount of time grappling with that with people in my life who you know, present different things that I find challenging. And what I've ended up doing a lot of the time is realizing that I have to put my commentary or my comments with that person in the context of what they're experiencing. And so sometimes the best I've been able to do is ask a very open, you know, keep my heart open and ask a very open-hearted question. So, for example, I have a friend who really gets very angry and vociferous about politics, which is something I find difficult to be in the presence of a lot. And so I've learned that sometimes the best thing I can do is ask a question that neither of us may know the answer to, but just to put it out there. So, for example, you know, how do you think war could come to an end? You know, what would work? How could people stop doing this to each other? So it's been one of the biggest practices I think I've had to do in my life is to find a way, because I've been on the receiving end of friendships where someone delivered a comment, but it felt like it was a little bit from a sanctimonious place or a place that wasn't relating to where I was experiencing things. So I think it's a tough practice, and I think it's a good one.
Hey, there's a passage somewhere in the scriptures where the Buddha addresses that specifically, and I can't recall where it was, but he said, is it beneficial to the recipient of the comment? Is it beneficial to that person? Is it beneficial to yourself? Is it kind? Is it helpful? And is the timing right? So those are some guidance.
Yeah, I think you're mentioning the qualities of right speech, which are exactly, it's true, kind, beneficial, timely, and spoken with a heart of loving kindness, I believe. And so, and then there are various qualifications around that. For example, speech that is not true or beneficial should never be said. And beyond that, there are conditions about choosing the right time. So thank you for that reminder.
So much of what is sort of current is this idea of live and let live and acceptance of other people the way they are and not taking somebody else's inventory. I mean, that's all part of some of the, you know, just accepting people the way they are and not and being powerless over changing them and not that's and so I'm wondering, this seems to be so different to me.
I see. So that sounds different to you than the taking on the qualities of those that we're associating with and having is
or
that what you're
trying to change?
I see.
Trying to affect a change in another person, you know, from the sake of the relationship or even for my sake.
Well, as always, there's you know, there's a balance, and I think you have to be pretty good friends with someone before it's appropriate to admonish them or, you know, in the way that I said. So I should qualify that to say that that's something that is that emerges from a relationship that's already trusting and deep. It's more, I mean, I can almost say that friendship is almost seen as something that we should undertake to benefit ourselves in this practice. You know, it's we understand that our mind and our heart are malleable and will take on the qualities of those that we are with. And so, first of all, we choose in some, maybe in a little bit passive way, that we choose to be with, say, a teacher or a spiritual community because we want to have that good influence on us. You know, it's like, oh, I want to be in a place that's calm, that's devoted to kindness, where people are mindful, that sort of thing. And as we grow in strength and we become one of those folks that other folks are seeking, then there's almost a sense that it's a little bit, I don't want to say active, like we're, you know, going out with an idea of what we're doing, but then, you know, we become that strength for others, and others can come to benefit from our presence. So it's a process. Does that address? Yeah. Maybe one more.
I've been traveling and visiting some old friends from different subcultures, and it's been interesting to me to notice how much just staying true to myself and what I really do believe these days and what my values really are, you know. And if someone says something that's meant to be funny but it's somehow crude and offensive, I don't have to do that social laughing thing. I can just not laugh. And just in being true to myself, it has a sort of subtle influence. And I've also just had so many fascinating cases where just in saying something true to myself rather than keeping it inside, that it's resonated with something in that person that I didn't know about. Somebody was giving me a ride from a rental car agency, you know, and we were just chatting about where we grew up and things, and somehow I just mentioned that what I was doing was I was volunteering, and, you know, I'd retired and I was doing some volunteer work, including some meditating. And he started talking, oh, yes, he's also does volunteer funerals for people who don't have any spiritual practice. And somehow the whole conversation went off in that way instead of staying on this trivia of, you know, what we were talking about before. So just something about being true to yourself has a great influence on others.
Yeah, beautiful. That's the scent that travels in all directions, including upwind. So... thank you all. May we be good friends this year.